This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice.
Each week, we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts or redefining what it means to be creative.
I'm Tony Williams.
And I'm Eli Koslansky.
And we're your host for Art Moves. Today, we'll be talking to Tracy Lester. Now, Tracy, you are the executive director of the Center for Fiction, now also located in Brooklyn. So, Tracy, talk to us about what is the Center for Fiction for those who have not visited your beautiful, beautiful space in downtown Brooklyn.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to speak with you about the Center for Fiction. We've been in downtown Brooklyn since 2019 when we opened our doors. But our history is a long history, a long, interesting history. We've been around for over 200 years. But we moved to Brooklyn in 2019 when there was an opportunity to be part of the Brooklyn Cultural District. And so we're here for 1 year, and then we closed for a year and a half because of COVID, and we reopened in 2021 and 2022. And so we are back sort of in action with programs in person and online programming, and we're just happy to be here to talk with you about what we do.
So what's your mission? What is this? You know, when I go there, I see a bookstore. What else is going on behind those walls?
Well, our mission is to uplift fiction and storytelling in all its forms. We're a home for readers and writers. And so when you come to the Center for Fiction, you will walk into our building and the first thing you will see is our bookstore. And the bookstore is the first point of contact for anyone in the community who might like to learn about what we do. We also have a cafe. We have an auditorium for public programming that you can access weekly. We're open 7 days a week. But on our second floor, we have a members lounge, and we're also a lending library. And that's kind of the heart of what the Center for Fiction does. Our 200-year history is attached to our being a membership library organization. And we're part of a network of 18 membership libraries across the country. So when you become a member of the Center for Fiction, not only do you access our book collection, you access our member spaces. You can also partake in our reading and writing workshops and our book groups. And you can also learn about our writer's studio, which is available for emerging writers and more seasoned writers who want to work on their books and articles and stories. And so we have a lot of different things happening in the building. So it's not just a bookstore.
So you have a variety of communities, I would imagine, from, of course, writers and general public, but there are other ones that are engaged with the center?
So we have an Emerging Writer Fellowship that we award annually to 9 emerging writers in the field. And those are new writers who have not yet fully published many works. And so we award them with cash prizes, and they're able to spend a year with us engaging in what we might call professional development in the craft of writing and in the field of publishing and the literary arts. And so those fellows are with us for 12 months. And they're a particular focus for us as we really want to connect with the next generation of writers to help uplift them and the work that they're creating.
Now, do you have to be, are there any kind of resident requirements, meaning can someone from California take advantage of your services in terms of I'm talking about just the writing piece.
So for the writing fellowship, you need to be a New York City-based writer. But our programming, actually to sort of to talk more a bit about what happened during COVID, and I think you've probably had these conversations with so many in the arts and cultural arena, many of us had to take our programming online. And we were able to offer virtual programming, and we reached wider audiences than we ever expected. So we were creating reading and writing workshops and public programs that were available online, and we reached audiences in California and Australia and Europe. And so if you're not here in Brooklyn and you're not able to actually come to our physical space, you can also access our programming online. But for the Emerging Writer Fellows, they're New York City based.
So in some ways, is this a new kind of an extension of the programming born of COVID? Or
definitely a new extension of the programming born of COVID. I mean, so many organizations here in Brooklyn are place-based. Our identities are in the community. And of course, we want to be connected to the community that we serve. But we also had to be creative in how we reached other audiences and to survive. And those who were able to change to online programming were probably more successful in the end just because we reached wider audiences and we even captured donations further afield.
But you're also part of this sort of burgeoning, well, not sort of, but you are, this burgeoning cultural district in Brooklyn. And I'm just curious if there's like, does that bring any benefits to being in that, aside from audience and location? Is there some cross-disciplinary kind of, or cross-cultural programs or activities?
Do you work with BAM?
We work with BAM. We want to give props to BAM BAM was here, right? It was the BAM cultural district for decades, in fact. And we arrived in 2019. So we're kind of the new kids on the block, but we have a lot to offer to the community. And we are very much a partner with all of our cultural institutions, BAM, Brick, Mokata will soon be opening across
the street. 651
Arts. Yeah, absolutely. And so we want to be a partner. We want to share events, authors, communities of people that come in our space to go to those spaces. Tifana, Mark Morris, we're all in it together. And right now, after COVID, it's even more important to emphasize the need to come together with a shared understanding for supporting the community.
What are you feeling in terms of energy coming out of COVID? You know, because you started during COVID when you became the executive director, and I imagine that was challenging. So the first part of my question is, how did you navigate that? And now we're coming out, we're kind of sleepy and reticent. That's kind of the energy that I'm feeling.
Sleepy and reticent?
Like the energy just feels kind of, we're coming. Well, you know, do I really want to be here? Do I want to really be at home? You know, there are people who don't even want to come back into the workplace right now. Some, not all, but some.
Yeah, there's a lot of feelings around sort of the reemergence from COVID. And I mean, exhaustion is probably on top of everyone's list. We were exhausted. We worked very hard. Many of us created a whole new business line called COVID Preparedness and Response. But there's also excitement about opening back up, inviting people in, connecting with people in a physical space, and sort of that person-to-person connection that can't be found anywhere else unless you're open. So we're excited to be welcoming the public back into our space, and we're excited to be offering public programming. But we also know that now that we went online, we can't necessarily retreat from that, because there are people who may never be comfortable in a space, and we want to make sure that we don't lose them in this shift that's occurring.
Yeah, there's gains and losses, because you lose the power of serendipity about stopping by people's desks and say, I have an idea, what do you think of?
Yeah, so the workplace has changed. Yeah. I mean, I have colleagues who will be remote, and there are colleagues who will be hybrid, and there are colleagues who want to come in because they just can't work at home anymore.
And that changes your workplace culture, too, because how do you form a culture in this kind of a hybrid situation, right?
Yeah, it's a great question. Mm-hmm. I think the key to that is communicating often, being open, soliciting feedback, finding out what works for the team, for the organization, for the institution. A lot of it's just communicating often.
Now, perhaps you can answer this question. How do you think social media and Twitter have influenced writing? Because, you know, you're the ED, so does that mean that, but in your mind, has that had an influence on it?
There's a lot of sharing of information on social media, and we have a very strong social media platform across all of the platforms, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. TikTok is an area that we'll be looking into. There's a lot of sharing of information, of sharing of ideas, and connecting with authors in that way. I think the social networking aspect is really strong and robust, and people are finding out about what we're doing because we're on social media. In fact, our social media footprint probably doubled during COVID because that's where people were going for information.
So you're a relatively newly minted executive director. So have you found, and coming upon the scene, if you will, of the Center for Fiction, have you found any hidden treasures there that you say, oh, that's interesting, who knew
it
was here?
Well, I'm new to the Center for Fiction, but I'm not new to being an executive director. I've actually been in the nonprofit sector for close to 30 years. So I have a few leadership positions under my hat. So,
well, I nearly meant it. I mean the position. I meant more
But I say that because of that. There are some things that are common to nonprofit operations and administration, regardless of the setting, and there are some things that are new. And here at the Center for Fiction, one of the things that was really important for us was to make sure that the writer's voice was prominent in the work that we do. And so when the center reopened after COVID, one of the first programs we reopened was our writer's studio, because writers were at home. They were with their partners. They were with their children, their pets, their family, all in their apartments. And they were having challenges sort of being creative, and they needed a space to go to. So our writer's studio opened many months before the rest of the organization opened so that they could come in and have a place to work. Our bookstore was one of the first areas to open as well, because despite the fact that everyone was home, people still wanted to go somewhere, and retail, as we know, was the front line. And so our booksellers were right there to greet people who were coming in for things to read and sort of conversation around books. And so one of the nuggets was that the writers needed a place to write, and they needed to be able to talk about their experiences during this time.
But also in some ways, there's a connection between the writers and the people and the booksellers, you're saying.
Yeah, well, there was a connection just with the community. The booksellers were there, the writers were there, and some of our administrative team were there as well, because, you know, we had to be open.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. And we're talking to Tracy Lester from the Center for Fiction just about her work and fiction. So why don't I just kind of pick up with, what is it that you're doing with young writers? And I'm thinking of those that need to be nurtured and brought on, young people, very young people. Can you talk to us about the programs that you have in that area?
Well, we have a Kids Read, Kids Write program, which is an amazing program where we work with children in public schools, young children, middle school grade children. We connect them with writers in the schools, and we also bring them into the center, and we look forward to welcoming them back now that the center is open, schools are doing field trips. And so we want the children to meet writers and to have the experience of learning about what it is to create a story. We also purchase the books for the schools and for the libraries of the schools, and so none of the schools pay for this service. And we see them as the next generation of writers. And so by sort of instilling in them this love for literature and understanding of the craft of writing, we hope that they will perhaps one day be writers themselves.
Very interesting. You know, there's a theory, they say that memory exists in a narrative.
Yeah. So. Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, so can we talk a bit about the writers themselves?
Certainly. Well, I was going to ask a little bit, and perhaps you know, we're in a moment right now with social justice and just people actually really digging into their history as people, you know, ancestry. What are you seeing? Are there any trends in terms of what you're seeing in fiction or what's coming out of the Center for Fiction with your writers?
Well, fiction serves it meets the needs of so many people. Within fiction, you can both escape, you can read someone else's experience and see yourself in their story, and it helps you to sort of rethink the world around you. And so what we found during COVID, and what I hear now and others know, is that people are writing stories that relate to their own personal experiences. And so much has happened over the last few years. Of course, George Floyd is a kind of a very significant point in our history, and then COVID, and now, of course, we have what's happening in Ukraine and so many other events, that writers are inspired to take those stories and really kind of create works that others can identify with and create an opportunity to kind of immerse themselves into the story.
It's interesting. Could you talk a little bit about the benefits of keeping a daily journal? It just came to mind.
Well, you know,
for not just writers, for like...
I think it just takes it allows you to free yourself. You put the thought on the page and then you sort of build on it. So it's a place where you can kind of keep building momentum around your feelings and your thoughts. And it also is a place you can refer back to see kind of where you were a week ago, a year ago, 10 years ago, and how you've progressed or changed or evolved. So,
or maybe what you need to make a mental note of. You know, there are many moments that you can have in a life that if you can go back to the journal and say, well, what was that I was thinking? Oh, that's what I need to be. You know, that's where I am now. That's where I was then, and this is where I am now.
Kind it's of almost like an out-of-body experience. You know, you see yourself on the page and where you were at that time and that moment in time.
It'd be great if more people did it.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's talk a little bit about you. You know, you were an executive. One comment that you made during this interview was this wasn't the first time that you were an executive director.
No, it's not. Before joining the Center for Fiction, I was the executive director of the National Dance Institute, which is an arts education program. And before that, I spent over a decade with an organization called Reach Out and Read, which is an early literacy program. So I've been in the nonprofit sector for a long time, and I've been in the arts and cultural arena and even education for over 25 years. So I've seen a lot. I've been in New York City doing all that work, and I'm excited to be at the Center for Fiction, particularly because it's sort of a personal, the mission is personal to me and my family in terms of our background in the arts. And my father was a jazz musician, and grandmother started the first literary club for Black women in Roselle, New Jersey in the early 1900s.
What's your father's name?
His name was Connie Lester.
Okay.
And he was a saxophonist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he performed for, you know, my whole life. He passed away a few years ago. And so the arts were all around us, and it matters to me, and it matters that people care about the arts and the literary arts and the written word and the spoken word and storytelling and carrying stories forward and sharing information with others through either the written word and now because of Audible and other formats, you can listen to stories too.
I guess in some ways that being in the field so long that you've also seen how things have transpired to a certain extent or transformed.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say there is any sort of shift in what people are writing about? Must be, or the form itself about people, how people are writing?
Well, I think this goes back to one of the questions you asked me earlier in terms of a personal experience and how it influences the narrative, the story. And I feel like a lot of writers, and it's probably not new today, but are writing from sort of within that particular spark or emotion or event that occurred that in their life that they want to expound upon and that they want to turn into a story so that it's enough of a story that it's fiction, it's different, it's not them, it's not a biography, but it has a piece of them in it so that they can reflect on, when others read it, they can reflect on it being somehow to do with their own life.
My sister is writing this article about our great-great-grandfather, mm-hmm. who was the superintendent of the Citadel, and there's just this, she's doing tons of research on it,
mm-hmm.
but she just won't let it go. Do you know, what is that? Do you know what that is when writers, you know, hold on to their, where it feels like it's not quite finished? How does your writing program address those kinds of things?
Well, we offer writing workshops mm-hmm. on different forms of the writing craft, and there's probably a workshop called How to Let It Go, but it's also the narrative, creating fiction, sort of how to create the story and the ways to kind of wrap up the story, basically to finish your book. And so we offer workshops on every aspect of writing and the writing craft to help with that.
And intellectual property, that seems to be quite an issue. So often I hear writers that keep their stories close because they don't want someone to take the idea that they have. How does that work?
So with our writing fellows, one of the things that we do for them is each month we hold a special dinner and we bring in a guest writer, a guest publicist, a guest editor, a guest literary agent to talk about sort of creating your book, how to protect your book, how to publish your book, how to market your book, sort of every stage of the process to becoming a full-fledged author, you know, quote. And we talk about that, the intellectual property and what you need to know, the contracts, what you should be looking for when you're signing deals, turning the book into a movie. Because once you write the book, actually, the next big thing is you want to have your story picked up for the screen. And so how do you sort of move from the book to the adaptation to film? What does that look like? And then selling your book for overseas markets, which is an entirely different sort of negotiating process, how to find the right agent to help you with that. So we take writers through that whole process.
Now, do they have to be affiliated with you, or are these like classes that you can just take?
So,
by being a member?
That's a two-part answer.
Okay.
For our emerging writer fellows, that's specifically what we do for them. Part of the fellowship is to have access to this information. Our writing workshops, which are open to the general public, you can take different workshops on different aspects of writing and creating your book. So that answer is it's available for both audiences in different ways.
Yeah, I have a story. I don't know why this came up, but I was sitting next to Margaret Atwood.
Oh, yeah.
But I had no idea who she was.
Oh, no.
And I asked her for writing.
As long as you didn't say that
to her, it's okay. No, but I asked her for writing tips. She gave me the strangest look, and I couldn't figure out why, you know. Then my wife said, you know who that is. So, yeah, so I have a question about the range of writers, because you must see quite a range from people who write about X or Y. Is it more than just the subject matter or types of writers or...
We see all kinds of writers, from the newly minted writer to the seasoned writer. Our writer studio is where we often see that kind of range of writers. The writer studio is a place that you can come each month and you can have a quiet space to work at the Center for Fiction on your book or your novel or your essay. And so we really do see a range of writers who some have published many books, some are working on their first book, and they're all kind of together in the writer studio, which is nice for them to sort of be with each other.
So I imagine the subjects must range from, you know, romance to science fiction to you name it. Yes.
Well, in the writer's studio, they can write. Yeah, they can be working on an essay for the New Yorker or New York Times, or they could be working on their first book of fiction or their essay about their family. So there's no limitation there. The name the Center for Fiction came about in 2006. Before we were the Center for Fiction, we were known as the Mercantile Library of New York, which is the history of the organization dating back almost 200 years. And when it was changed to the Center for Fiction, the focus was on uplifting fiction and storytelling. And so while our public programming is not only specific to fiction, our emphasis is on works of fiction. And our bookstore, the majority of the books that you'll find in the bookstore are fiction. But we also have nonfiction, we have poetry, we have children's books as well. And so our programming is available to others. It's accessible for different genres.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. We're talking to Tracy Lester, the executive director of the Center for Fiction.
You said something about storytelling, and, you know, that's something that I'm hearing all over the place. You know, in corporate America, they're talking about storytelling. Nonprofits are talking about storytelling, like how do you tell the story of your organization? Do you all dig into any of that at all? I imagine you don't, but talk to us about the aspect of storytelling and the writing piece.
Well, we focus on fiction and storytelling. Our goal is to help people tell the story in the format that works best for them. And so the workshops that we offer often focus on how to tell the story, where to begin, sort of what pieces do you want to uplift in your story to emphasize what will grab the audience. And so people are interested in stories. They're interested in the human connection. I mean, businesses talk about it because they want to know how to draw in customers. Nonprofits talk about it because they want to talk about how to reach wider audiences or community members or constituents or clients. And so you have to be able to make your case, tell your story so that people feel a connection to it and they want to read more and they want to learn more about what you're writing about.
In selecting the people that you want to focus on in terms of your events, the authors that you select, how do you do that?
Well, our senior director of public programs spends a lot of time on email and on the phone with the publishing houses and talking about the books that are coming out even a year ahead. And so we can start planning a calendar a year in advance on the new releases. And then we look to see if the author's available to come in, and we like to pair them with another sort of writer or public figure in that space in conversation with them. We have an On America series that focuses on stories and works related to communities across this country. We have a storyteller series where we bring in actors who read from and perform excerpts of works from the author, and then they're in conversation on the stage around their work. So we plan a year out, and a lot of it's just looking to see what are the hot new titles that are on the horizon.
Absolutely. Any collaboration with the Brooklyn Public Library at all? Just wondering, since you both serve in that space.
Well, the Brooklyn Public Library, we are interested in partnering with them around the children's programming. And so, you know, authors will rotate from one setting to another. And our goal is to make sure that the children in our community are having access to the authors, particularly in Brooklyn. So if Brooklyn Public Library has a wonderful author event, we'd love to have an author, the same author, come in to meet with the children in the schools that we serve. So the key is to have as many children reached as possible.
So do you have any outreach programming like that, that we go to the school, or does it have to come to the center? How does that work?
Well, because of COVID, we were able to Zoom in to all the schools. But ideally, we would like them to come to the Center for Fiction or help get them to the Center for Fiction so they not only could see our space, be surrounded by all the books, but just have the experience of being in this literary setting and understanding what that means to be around these written works and these authors. And so coming into our space is key. But and again, because of COVID, we're still Zooming into a lot of classrooms as well.
Interesting. I guess there's a serendipitous moment where some young person could come into the space and have the epiphany that they could be a writer.
They could be a writer. I mean, they see the books in the bookstore. They talk to the booksellers. They talk to our librarians. And they learn about sort of careers in this sector.
I would like a story, if you have one, around someone that you did discover, someone that you have launched. Is there an author that you have launched?
Well, I don't know that we can claim credit for launching any particular author, but our but our Emerging Writer Fellowship is the way that we really do touch new and emerging writers, and we've worked with many people, and it's each year we bring on 9 new fellows, and once they leave, they go on to publish their works. And so we've worked with some amazing fellows over the years, and I think that we could sort of take credit for having been involved in their trajectory over time.
Absolutely.
Mitchell Jackson is one of them. He wrote Survival Math. He won the Pulitzer Prize. You may recall he wrote the story about Ahmaud Arbery in The Outside magazine, and he won a Pulitzer Prize for that. He was one of our earlier Emerging Writer Fellows. Kara Blue Adams is out now with a new book called You Never Get It Back, and she was an Emerging Writer Fellow. So they do leave us and go publish books, and you know, we hope that we are kind of the launch pad for their success.
And what's the criteria for becoming a fellow?
You need to be New York City based. Right, you need to not have published a book yet.
Okay.
You apply to the Emerging Writer Fellowship. The applications will open in May. It's a judged process. We have a panel of judges who review the submissions with recommendations. And it's a competitive process, and we narrow it down to 9, and we announce them in the fall.
Want to talk a little bit about, you know, we're in this moment. You've mentioned Ahmaud Arbery. There's George Floyd. How, when it comes to this being a moment where the country is focused on social justice and we want to keep that momentum going, how has the Center for Fiction integrated that into your programming, or how do you integrate something like that into your program?
Well, and also this movement around banned books, which is really critical.
Exactly. Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
Our programming really is designed to be inclusive in terms of the voices that you hear and that you come to listen to. The authors, we try to pair them with individuals who are from the community, who represent different diverse constituencies. And so it is really important for us to be on point around sort of social justice issues as well as racial equity, and making sure that we appear as an accessible space and in an accessible place, and that we're a place that everyone can come to, and that there's some kind of programming or story that they'd like to hear and that we're speaking to them.
I really like DEIB, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. So when people come into your space, they immediately feel welcome. I think it's a very warm place myself, you know, but to be able to feel welcome, to be able to learn and take advantage of all your services is a really great thing.
Thank you. And one of the ways that we've been kind of cultivating new programming is to really involve the staff in the design of programs, so that our community offerings, which is sort of public programs that the community can partake in, has the input from the staff around what would be of interest to people just walking by the building, or somebody who on a Friday night needs somewhere to go. Or tonight, for instance, we have Bring Your Own Book. You need only show up with a book. You can sit in our cafe with a tea, and there'll be a whole lot of other people with a book reading. And there's no other obligation. And so just knowing that there's some place to go.
Absolutely. Well, Tracy, I want to say that your place is one of the most beautiful places in downtown Brooklyn.
Thank you.
Oh, for sure.
It's gorgeous. And so happy that you are a part of the cultural scene here in downtown Brooklyn.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for joining us on Art Moves.
Pleasure.
Art Moves is co-produced by Brick Arts Media and pre-recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn.
This has been Art Moves with your hosts, Tony Williams and Eli Kozlansky. Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.